And you're listening to the Jefferson Exchange here on Jefferson Public Radio, and it's about 8:40. I'm John Baxter in today for Jeffrey Riley. Over 20 years ago, the Canadian essayist and novelist John Ralston Saul wrote the following: "We are now in the midst of a coup d'etat in slow motion. Democracy is weakening and corporatism is strengthening." A new documentary film, The Corporate Coup d'Etat, showing tomorrow evening at SOU, aims to show just how corporations have hijacked American democracy, creating a new gilded age in which we are experiencing some of the greatest wealth gaps in living memory, perhaps ever. Our guest this morning, Jeff Cohen, co-produced the film. Jeff is also co-founder of Roots Action and the media watchdog Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, also known as FAIR. And he will also be leading a Q&A after tomorrow's screening. Good morning, Jeff.
Great to be with you.
Thanks for being with us. So how did this movie originate? It seems to draw a lot on the work of Chris Hedges, who's appeared on our show in the past. What was his involvement?
Yeah, well, we had we got that quote from John Ralston Saul, which was pretty adventurous back in the 1990s, to talk about a corporate takeover of Western democracies. And he inspired Chris Hedges a lot. So in the movie, you'll see Hedges explaining how much he's been influenced by John Ralston Saul, the Canadian public intellectual. And we have both of them in the movie. We've got Cornel West, the great public intellectual from the United States. So it was in many ways inspired by this idea that our democracy is shrinking as corporations take more power. And you pointed out, I think importantly, the result of that is this gilded age, that the wealth and income has been going to the top, and there's increasing despair and anger among the once middle class as so much of the wealth goes to the top, and there's so much insecurity among the formerly middle class and the working class and the poor. So I think that the high point of the movie, and there was a rave review of our documentary in the Hollywood Reporter, where they said this is a horror film of the most the most realistic kind. But in Hollywood Reporter, they said that the strength of the documentary, and I really agreed with it, is that we don't just talk about how corporations took power and how democracy shrunk in our country. We talk about the impact. And so we went to two sacrifice zones. These are, cities or towns or regions that were used by corporations, exploited by corporations. Corporations took all this taxpayer support with the roads running directly to their factories. And the minute they could move somewhere else for less environmental regulation or cheaper labor, they did. And so you have these sacrifice zones across our country. And our movie focuses on two: Camden, New Jersey, and Youngstown, Ohio.
So the term sacrifice zones, is that your term, or is that a term that's actually being used by economists now?
Yeah, it's being used heavily by sociologists and progressive journalists. Chris Hedges has been one of the pioneers. Chris Hedges has written so much about Camden, New Jersey. Chris lives in New Jersey, and he teaches inside the prisons in New Jersey, and he's really chronicled how a city like Camden, which is right across from Philadelphia, Camden, New Jersey, it used to be just a bustling, upwardly mobile, middle-class industrial place, and all those corporations have fled, and now it's drugs, crime, it's no jobs, it's despair. So the sacrifice zones has gained increasing currency as an explanation or a description in the last few years, and Chris Hedges has been a big part of that. One of the fascinating things in the movie, I know this from going around and doing these recent screenings, that we interview a lot of workers in Youngstown, Ohio, which used to be the steel belt and union, upward mobility, middle-class jobs, and then the steel belt is gone, and it went to Mexico, and it went to other countries. So we interviewed all these white working-class people that had been Democrats, had voted for Obama a couple times. Some of them voted for Bernie over Hillary in the primary. the Democratic primary of 2016, and then they jumped and voted for Trump. And we wanted to figure out, you know, what happened. I mean, the movie attempts to figure out, how did we get to Trump? And the movie suggests that Trump is sort of a symptom of this disease that's been building for 40 years, which is corporatism. And the system has rotted out politically. The commercial media system is so bad. There's so much misinformation among the voters. There's so much anger among working class people. And in places like Ohio, the working class people we talked to said these were the two worst candidates, and I opted for Trump because I thought he might change things. And it's sort of a sad commentary.
We're talking with Jeff Cohen, who is the co-producer of a film titled The Corporate Coup d'Etat. It's going to be screening tomorrow at 6 p.m. in the SOU Hannon Library Mies Room, which is on the third floor of the Hannon Library on the SOU campus in Ashland. And Jeff will also be leading a Q&A after the film. So I want to get back to your point about Donald Trump being the logical outcome of the process, because that seems like a major point in the film. And it's one that I think is missed by a lot of mainstream Democrats. Many of the voters that elected Donald Trump had voted for Obama in 2008 and again in 2012 because he was supposed to be the big agent of change.
Yeah.
And that kind of flies in the face of the line of reasoning that you hear from a lot of people on the left that, Trump voters, they're all just a bunch of racists.
Yep. I agree with you. I think you hear it less on the left than the people that you call the mainstream Democrats, that I would call the corporate Democrats. They don't want to face what happened. And what happened was a rejection of the Democratic Party, which many of these workers in Ohio especially, and you could say in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, I grew up in Michigan, they felt betrayed. They'd been told, the Democrats are going to be the party that stands up for working class people against corporate greed. And a lot of these people who flipped to Trump, they were not crazy racist. We interviewed them in the movie. They voted for Obama. They voted for Bernie. They wanted someone who would not be part of the establishment. A couple people in the movie were former union workers in Ohio that said, we voted for him because he wasn't one of them. He wasn't a politician of the type that had told us how much they were going to do for us while these politicians voted for NAFTA and allowed so many jobs to flee to slave labor or cheap labor countries. So it's a complex, and I should mention, this would be interesting to a public radio audience. We made an alliance with this great reporter who's covered racial issues for NPR. His name is Philip Martin. He's a public radio reporter from Boston. He's the one that we sent with the film crew to Ohio to interview the workers, including a lot of white working class people. And he's the one who is just blown away by what he's hearing. I mean, some of these workers sounded like they were Occupy Wall Street activists, very anti-corporate, very critical of corporate greed and the billionaires. And then they voted for one because they saw him as somehow the agent of change and Hillary Clinton as more of the same. And as you said, sort of continuing 8 years of Obama, and they felt that Obama had not delivered, and people who had voted for Obama then flipped to Trump. And it's a fascinating phenomenon, and I don't think there's many movies that have looked at the phenomenon that we did.
Jeff Cohen is co-producer of a film called The Corporate Coup d'Etat, screening tomorrow at SOU. You can join the conversation with us this morning on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. One of the points made in the film, Jeff, is that the film kind of traces the origins of this, what you call corporate coup d'etat, back to the 1970s. Why then? Was that a backlash to the upheavals of the 60s when the country's power structure was really challenged by essentially the middle class in response to the very unpopular war in Vietnam?
Yeah, I think it's partly it was a reaction to that. There's a famous Powell memo. Lewis Powell was the attorney for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. He later became a U.S. Supreme Court judge. And he wrote this memo about how there's all this activism and there's all this questioning of corporate power, and we've got to do something about it. I think at the end of the 70s, the end of Carter was sort of the beginning of the deregulation. Then Reagan comes in January 81, and it's full speed ahead. It was the marketplace must rule. Let's not have concerns about that former Republicans had. Remember, President Eisenhower presided over a system where the middle class was growing, the government was providing jobs. The taxes on the wealthiest people was 90%. That's where sort of the consensus was among the governing class through the 50s, 60s, 70s, and then things really broke once Reagan came in. And then it was trickle down, you know, help the rich. Corporations took increasing power over both parties. I like to say the corporate elite controls 99% of the Republican Party and approximately half of the Democratic Party. And so we talk about how corporations really gained a foothold within the Democratic Party, which had traditionally been the party of the working class, the party of the union movement. And that really shifted in the 80s, especially with the rise of Bill Clinton in 92.
But wasn't this always the case? I mean, I remember the catchphrase, what's good for General Motors is good for America, which dates back to World War II or just after.
Well, it's a good question. I mean, the work of the French economist Thomas Piketty is very important because he's the guy who traced the history of capitalism for hundreds of years, beginning in England. And he says that capitalism has always operated, as you say, trying to grab everything for what's good for General Motors. Let's just make sure General Motors is happy. You know, let's make sure the rich are happy. Let's make sure the factory owners are happy. That's traditionally what the history of capitalism shows us, that the rich have used government and anything else, media, to take as much power as they could for themselves. But the real anomalous period is from the late 1930s to the late 1970s, where you had 40 years in our country, and it was because of the strength of socialist movements and union movements in the 30s that for this anomalous, unusual period of 40 years, union strength grew. One out of every three workers coming out of World War II and in the early 50s was in a union. And if you go from the beginning of World War II to 1967, the income of average workers in our country actually doubled in about a 25-year period. So that's the anomalous. You're right that hasn't it always been that the rich try to use the levers of power to get even more wealth for themselves without concern for society as a whole? I think that's accurate. But there was this period from the late 30s to the late 70s where the middle class was growing, where you could send your kids to college, where college tuition was virtually free. I went to a public college in the late 60s. It was virtually free. So, you know, this has all been undone. And I think that's why there's so much anger and despair from Camden, New Jersey to Youngstown, Ohio, over to the West Coast. There's a lot of despair. And it was Trump, I think, who was able to understand that, wow, the people are not happy, and let me tap into some anger and give people some scapegoats.
The film is called The Corporate Coup d'Etat. Jeff Cohen, our guest this morning, is co-producer of the movie. It's going to be screening tomorrow at 6 o'clock at the Meese Room, in the Meese Room, which is on the third floor of the SOU Hannon Library
in Ashland. And John, so the signal reach Eugene? Because I'm going to be screening in Eugene as well.
Yes, we do.
Oh, let me just tell you real quickly. In Eugene today, I'll be at University of Oregon at 2 p.m., and then on Thursday, back at the Broadway Metro in Eugene at 6:30 p.m., and if anyone wants any of these details and addresses and where to buy tickets, my website has, at the very top of my website, jeffcohen.org, one word, jeffcohen.org, you could get the whole tour.
Okay, and we'll link to that also from our website. I want to get back to the race issue because we just got an email from a listener And I'm just going to read this email, and it kind of leads to a question I have. He says, you can say all you want that people who voted for Trump aren't racist, but you can't deny that they now stand on the side of the KKK anti-immigrant hatred and people who hate democratic values like voting access and equality. So how are those people who voted for Obama and then switched and voted for Trump, how are they feeling about the outcome, the result of their vote?
Yeah, well, we were interviewing them in 2017, 2018. It's hard for me to know. I like this comment. When I say these swing voters who'd voted for Obama, some of them voted for Bernie in the primary, and then they flipped to Trump, they're obviously not Black Lives Matter activists. You know, they're not militant supporters of abortion choice. You know, those are not swing voters. The swing voters are often lower information voters, and they, by definition, don't have a strong ideology. They certainly are not anti-racist fighters. But if you voted for Obama a couple times, it's not like you're. It proves you're not driven by virulent racism. So it's hard to know where some of those people are going to be in 2020. I mean, I think it's hard for some people to admit they made a mistake. And your emailer is right that there's some of them that probably swing voters that voted Democratic, voted Republican, voted for Obama, voted for Trump, that may now have drunk the Kool-Aid and may be the ones that we see at these rallies yelling and laughing at Donald Trump's stupid jokes. It's hard to know. I think there's probably some that have become hardcore Trumpites, and I think there's some that are going to come back. I don't know if you saw the news this morning. It's going around the internet that the conservative Republican former governor of Wisconsin, Scott Walker, has said that he believes the candidate for the Democrats who could win Wisconsin and beat Trump is Bernie Sanders. And it's on the basis that there's anger, there's despair, and Bernie Sanders really connects with working class people and rural people and independent voters. And, you know, our country is basically a third Democrats, a third Republicans, and a third independent. And we don't talk about those independent voters or those swing voters enough. But Scott Walker, the conservative Republican in Wisconsin who knows his state pretty well, he thinks Bernie Sanders is the candidate who could win those swing voters. And obviously, Bernie's got a long 50-year record of fighting against racism from when he was a youth.
Jeff, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to ask one other question about the corporate coup d'etat, because this is an issue that's come up in the presidential election, certainly among the Democrats. How does big tech figure into all of this?
Well, I think that's a new power broker in society. I mean, Bob McChesney, the communication scholar, has written a lot about this, that these corporations have grown faster and stronger, more powerful than any other sector when you look at U.S. industrial history. You know, the railroads were a power, the banks were a power, but it sometimes took them decades to get there. These high-tech companies, some of them have become just world powers in a 10-year period, a 15-year period. And I think you're right that Elizabeth Warren's talking about that they need to be looked at and more regulated, perhaps broken up. I think
we're gonna have to leave it there, Jeff. Jeff Cohen, the co-producer of the film, The Corporate Coup d'Etat, showing today in Eugene, tomorrow in Ashland, and then again in Eugene. Back with more at 9 o'clock on the